My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me now and we will explore these topics and so much more with fascinating guests, authors, and experts who will guide us to Destination Unlimited. Do you find that your road to happiness, fulfillment, and success is lined with detours and roadblocks? Have you been on the pinnacle of a major achievement when the inner voice plays back an old program telling you you're not good enough, smart enough, attractive enough, or even not worthy of being loved? These forms of self-sabotage are often hidden away in shields and defenses we learned as children. How can we turn these self-destructive patterns around? My guest this week on Destination Unlimited, Dr. Eldon Taylor, has a proven method and technique to do just that. Dr. Taylor is a mind power expert and a New York Times best-selling author. He's written 14 books and created more than 300 audio and video personal motivation programs. His best-selling books include I Believe When What You Believe Matters, Mind Programming, From Persuasion and Brainwashing to Self-Help and Practical Metaphysics. What Does That Mean? Exploring Mind, Meaning, and Mysteries, and What If? The Challenge of Self-Realization. Eldon is the host of the popular radio show Provocative Enlightenment, the inventor of the patented and scientifically proven Inner Talk technology, and founder of Progressive Awareness Research Incorporated. He's appeared in numerous films, television, and radio shows, is a regular guest on Coast to Coast AM with George Nouri, and lectures around the world. You can visit his website at www.eldontaylor.com. Please join me in welcoming Eldon Taylor. Good evening, Eldon.
Well, good evening. It is indeed my pleasure to join you, Victor. I thank you for the opportunity to share.
Thank you, and it's our pleasure to have you with us this evening. Now, you're joining us tonight to discuss the revised edition of your groundbreaking New York Times bestseller, Choices and Illusions. How did I get where I am, and how do I get where I want to be? This actually is a revised edition with 5 new chapters. Is that correct?
That's correct, sir.
Wonderful. So let's share with our listeners your background and how it led to this work.
Oh, that's an interesting question. My background, basically, I came into this field through a back door. That's the best way to say it. I was a practicing criminalist using my education for profiling purposes. My day typically consisted of conducting lie detection examinations, supervising an investigation, perhaps a forensic hypnosis session or two. And, for all intent and purposes, that's about as far away as you can get from self-help. But I'd always had an interest, Victor, in the mind, and a deep abiding interest in why people do what they do. And I can't tell you how many times I take a confession from someone, and I sit there and think, this is just crazy. You've got everything in the world going for you. Why would you do something this stupid? And, over time, I heard stories that were as simple as your setup piece. These old mechanisms, these old self-sabotaging mechanisms, we're basically herd animals and we want to be accepted. So as we begin our maturation process and that separation from parents, instead of them being our nuclear family, we begin to attempt to fit in with a herd of peers. And those peers are children. And they have a tremendous influence on us. And sometimes the influence is very bad. We can develop all kinds of defense mechanisms. Some defense mechanisms may have the appearance of being benign. Let me give you an example of that. I once had a situation where I discussed with a man. His problem that had been developed because he couldn't laugh and couldn't smile. He found that he was ostracized from parties. It was impacting his marriage and his domestic relationships, his family. And it was an issue that he had no understanding of because he found things funny. He just didn't seem to have the ability to express himself. Well, it turned out that in uncovering processes, when he was very young, something humorous had occurred, and he had laughed very hard at it. The way he contorted his smile was found to be peculiar, and his laugh was found to be funny, and funny not in a good way, and he was ridiculed and made fun of. And unconsciously, he clearly made a decision never to laugh or smile again. And this mechanism accompanied him throughout adulthood. So the man's in his 40s, and he's lived his life with an unconscious mechanism that has prevented him from smiling or participating in humor. Sometimes they can be really destructive mechanisms. I wouldn't consider the first to be benign, but many would think of it as, well, that's just how we adapt. That's what we do. But some I would find in my interrogations, and they would be the result of trying to fit in with the crowd, trying to go along, trying to, you know, be that person that was in a spoil sport, and it maybe led to some criminal activity in a group. Okay, well, now that you understand where I was, it happened that I heard about a research program that had been carried out by LAPD regarding preparation for the Los Angeles Olympics. And this was a subliminal technology they were using to dehydrate cadets during their pilot study in the academy. And it was allegedly very, very successful. Well, it was all about a abduction scenario and how they would use it if there was a terrorist abduction. But my concern was, now, wait a minute, if you can use a subliminal to do this, I could clear up inconclusives by using it in my lie detection practice. So I set about trying to determine what they had done and how they did it. And I never was able to get them either to deny or to admit that they had done this. And to this day, I don't know for certain if they did, but it launched a whole new aspect of my own career. In the end, I developed a technology. It wasn't subliminal. It's something called dichotic masking, but most refer to it as subliminal because it's not buried information, but you nevertheless don't consciously clearly recognize what's happening. But it worked so well in my lie detection practice that a friend of mine at Utah State Prison asked me if we could use this technology to rehabilitate inmates in the prison system. So we went out to the prison. We conducted the first ever of its kind double-blind study. We used some very sophisticated psychometrics. When we were all said and done, what we learned from our psychometrics wasn't anything we didn't know. We had high scores in self and social alienation. Well, when I met with these inmates and I discussed with them, I had a real epiphany. Ah, but for the grace of God, there go you. That was essentially the story I heard over and over again. They displaced responsibility by blaming everything on society. If I'm not any good, you're not any good either. You know, do unto you because you've done it unto me. A whole kind of get-even mentality. Bottom line, quick answer, that changed my life. Because not only were we able to use this technology as an intervention in the prison system to lower aggression and hostility, increase reflectivity, apparently even interrupt the recidivity rate. The data was so robust that the prison system installed voluntary libraries throughout all of the facilities, Youth Offenders to Maxima, other prison systems cloned it out, copied it. It was very, very successful. And there was a point that all of a sudden I saw a tool by which you could begin to change the way people talk to themselves and thereby change their expectation, which would thereby change their perception and thereby change their ability to manifest their highest potential and leave all these mechanisms behind. Long story, that's how I got retracked to where I am today, sir.
I have to share with you that very recently we had an opportunity to work with some young inmates at Rikers Island here in New York. In my day job, I'm in the welding and compressed gas and industrial supply industry, and Lincoln Electric, one of the manufacturers, came out with a device which simulates welding. And some wonderful young man in the prison is developing a program to try and give skills to these young inmates before they go into the general population, with the hope that they will recondition them and give them something to be interested in and move on. And I was giving a presentation on this machine. Thank you. I was giving the presentation on this machine. And in the process of doing so, I introduced myself and I said to these young men, who many of whom were members of gangs, I said, I'm come to talk to you today about a gang, a huge gang. It's a nationwide gang, a gang that you've probably never heard of. But this gang, made up of hundreds of thousands of men and women, make anywhere from $25 to $125 an hour, are respected, and are responsible for every major building, bridge, and infrastructure going up in this country today. I said, that gang is called the United Iron Workers Union, and if you learn something from me today, you could head to that gang, and they all got engaged by it. And we're going to continue talking about
That's wonderful. I love that, Victor.
Thank you, sir. And we're going to continue talking about all these wonderful changes with Dr. Eldon Taylor on Destination Unlimited after these messages from the OM Times Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
This is Terry Van Horn, and I want to invite you to join me for my weekly radio show, Healing Light, on OM Times Radio every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Healing Light, we want to bring love, light, and blessings into your world. You can find out more about us at www.healinglightonline.com. Blessings.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest this evening is Dr. Eldon Taylor. He's author of the book, Choices and Illusions: How Did I Get Where I Am, and How Do I Get Where I Want to Be? So we were talking a little bit about your background as a criminalist and working with these techniques that you discovered and were developing. In your book, Choices and Illusions, you say that our choices are not our own. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, that's an interesting fact. I open the entire book with a quote from Krishnamurti, which essentially goes this way. Choice is an illusion. It only arises as a result of confusion. Do I do this? Do I do that? That's a state of confusion. When I know clearly what I should be doing, there is no choice. Now, Krishnamurti was addressing the nature of God and whether or not God has a choice. Well, I think of it more like this. Benjamin Libet, 30 years ago, using cortical evoked, or using, I should say, EEG, watched cortical evoked potentials occurring in the area of the brain relegated to unconscious processes. And they occurred milliseconds before there was ever a motor movement, a conscious motor movement, vocalization of any kind. He theorized then that it was our subconscious, our unconscious, that was actually doing the thinking. Well, that brought about a great deal of controversy, because if that's the instance, well, then what do we mean by free will? Fast forward to a few years ago, and now I guess about 4 or 5 years ago, and functional magnetic resonance imaging, fMRI. What we know today, using fMRI, watching the brain live time, is that a technician will know what you're going to decide, will know the choice you're going to make between A and B, X and Y, on average 6 seconds before you know what you're going to choose.
Mm.
You stop and think about that. That should give reason for pause to everyone. If a technician watching my brain will properly record every choice I'm going to make on average 6 seconds before I record it, what does that tell me? That tells me that my subconscious mind is in charge. Now, a lot of other research shows us that the conscious mind is basically a rationalization mechanism. It's a storyteller. It makes up the reason for why I chose what I chose. So it's a 2020 hindsight mechanism. Well, now, if I pursue that, then I have to think that my choices are programmed into my subconscious. Now, generally speaking, today we think of the brain and the mind in terms of we have system one and system two. System one is automatic thinking. And the data shows us that the nucleus accumbens, again, an area of the unconscious, for all intent and purposes, operates as system one and is in charge of 95% plus of everything we do. System two, so that we can contrast it, is that part of the brain, mind, where we actually consider alternatives. We think about the ramifications. We evaluate possibilities. We consider impact and alternatives. Now, if you stop and think about your own life, all of the listeners out there, how often do we actually engage system two thinking? There's a wonderful book, one of the books that impacted me as much as anything I've read in my life, called Science and Sanity. And it's written by a man by the name of Korzynski, Alfred Korzynski. This book was originally published in 1933, and a lot of the language that he invented at that time, like neuro-linguistics, is a regular part of our dialogue today. But he spoke about something called semantic distortions. What he showed was that much of our thinking is anchored in semantic reasoning. And semantic reasoning can be the result of a semantic conditioning. And I think about that particularly right now when I look out into the world of politics and I see how people are just unable to even talk to one another if they're from opposing sides. And what I see is exactly what Korzynski described. We have taken a semantic proposition, have made a semantic belief out of it, anchored it, and it has a psychophysiological response to it now, which is a semantic distortion. So in other words, instead of it being a word that should be neutral for us to evaluate, it has become an emotion.
Yep.
So we can use some words, some nouns, even names of people especially, and there is a visceral response that is emotional. Now, when we stop for a minute and understand that this thinking is conditioned, just like Pavlov conditioning a dog to salivate, it's conditioned, it's not thought out, it's not reasoned, then we can understand how our unconscious can drive, our subconscious can drive all of our reactions, our thinking, our emotions. Okay, if that's the instance, and it is, this is not hocus pocus magic, this is a matter of neuroscience. If that's the instance, and we are driven by our subconscious, what then is the nature of free will? Where does free will come into this? It would appear that, you know, we are puppets being puppeted by information that has been enculturated in us, that has been semantically conditioned in us, that is the result of what I think of as often soundbite reasoning. And I think, how much time have we got?
Keep going.
Let me give you an example of soundbite reasoning. Because this is the work I do, one morning I'm watching two networks. One is a very liberal network, the other is a very conservative network. They are both conducting a poll on the same day. On one network, we have the question, should poor taxpayers be forced to pay for rich kids to go to private school? On the other network, we have the question, should poor taxpayers be forced to work two jobs in order to pay to put their children into private schools since our public schools are failing? Now, you can see how both these questions are framed.
Absolutely biased.
Now, there's two problems here. The first one is, this is about school vouchers. And what we should be doing is looking at what a school voucher is. Where does the money come from? How does it impact public education? Where is it used? Who takes advantage of it? Et cetera, and so forth. But we don't do that, and that gives rise to the second problem. We want to hear what we want to hear. That's a part of the conditioning. So if we happen to be liberal, don't talk to me about Fox. And if we happen to be conservative, don't talk to me about MSNBC.
Yep.
In other words, I'm not going to evaluate anything fairly. I'm going to take my soundbite to the water cooler at work. Of course, poor taxpayers shouldn't be forced to pay for rich kids to go to public schools. I'm opposed to those vouchers. And you see, that is so, in fact, I think of that as, you know, for all intent and purposes, that's not thinking at all. That is a total misuse of the word.
Absolutely.
But so much of what goes on in our lives is so conditioned that that's how we operate in the world. And in that sense, we're not making a choice. Here's a better example. Imagine that you're walking down the street, and you're in a new city. You're in New York City. You've always wanted to go to New York City. It's a glorious day. It could be London if you prefer London, and yeah, any city. It could be, you know, Rome. And it's just glorious day, and you've worked hard, and you've saved for a long time, and you're finally there, and you're just mesmerized by the beauty, the magnificence of this city. And as you walk along, you find yourself in this high-rise condo area that's just, you know, so tailored. This is obviously a very wealthy area. And from a third floor balcony, a flower pot falls. It hits you on the head. It falls to the floor, and the shards scatter out, and the flower breaks down and lays on the sidewalk, and you have an abrasion on your head, and you can feel the bump, but you know you're okay. It's just very aggravating, and it is somewhat painful. Now, you have some choices. Now, sharing this example with thousands of people, I'll tell you what the three choices are they all come up with. The first one is get even. I'm going to take the charge of this pot upstairs, and I'm going to put them you know where. Of course, if I get up there and I discover it's a lineman for the New York Giants, I may change my mind. The second one is I'm going to sue this fat cat. You know, that pot could have fallen on a baby in a buggy down here. I mean, you know, that just shouldn't happen. I'm going to sue him. It'll be a quick settlement. I mean, I don't know. What concussion, whiplash? I mean, what am I going to get?
Now, hold on for one second. We're going to keep our listeners in suspense for the third choice because we're going to have to take a break. And our guest tonight, Dr. Eldon Taylor, author of the New York Times bestseller, Choices and Illusions, How Did I Get Where I Am and How Do I Get Where I Want to Be? Eldon, please tell our listeners how they can find out more about you and this amazing work.
Oh, visit my website, EldonTaylor.com. I appreciate that very much. Thank you, Victor.
Thank you, and we'll be back with more of Eldon Taylor after these words from the Om Times Radio Network.
This is OTR-FM, part of the iOM Radio Network.
Are you in an interfaith relationship and thinking of getting married? For 18 years, Reverend Lori Sue Brockway has been creating personalized, loving, and romantic ceremonies for couples of all faiths and cultural backgrounds. Reverend Lori Sue's sensitivity to the needs of interfaith couples is reflected in the compassionate and inclusive way she addresses the concerns of parents and families. Reverend Lori Sue is also the author of several best-selling books on interfaith weddings and wedding vows. Selected as one of the top interfaith officiants by New York Magazine, Reverend Lori Sue serves couples in the New York metropolitan area and beyond. Find out more at her website, yourinterfaithwedding.com.
Have you ever wondered how to change your love paradigm? The secret key is finding a love partnership, not just a regular connection. How do you find these? Through conscious relationships. Ascending Hearts Dating is a dating site for people like you that believes in second chances and a different type of spiritual connection. Try Ascending Hearts for free today at AscendingHearts.com and change your love paradigm. Ascending Hearts, the premier dating community for the spiritually awake.
Hello! Join us, Lisa Berry and Michelle Carter, every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for the Mindset Makeover, What's Possible? Get ready to become present, clear, and unstuck, and start living fully, led by your heart. While you listen and feel this transformation through vibration of word, sound, and song, you'll open up to what's possible and experience your shift.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest tonight, Dr. Eldon Taylor, author of the book, Choices and the Illusions, How Did I Get Where I Am and How Do I Get to Where I Want to Be? Now, before the break, you were giving us an example of how we don't have choices, that our choices are not our own. And you gave the example of someone strolling down the street in any city that you might name. A flower pot comes flying off of a shelf or a balcony, hits this person on the head, shatters on the floor. The person obviously touches the head. They have a bump coming up. They're in pain. And they have three choices. You enumerated the first choice as taking the shards, going up to the apartment, finding the person who the flower pot belonged to, and giving them a taste of their own flower pot. The second option was finding a lawyer and suing them. Just amazing to me how our culture has been conditioned through television commercials with every 15, I don't know about in your market, sir, but in New York City, every 15 seconds, there's a commercial from some lawyer saying, hurt in an accident, call number, and, you know, somebody said that the insurance would give them $100,000, we get them $10 million. So the sue consciousness of the society is there. Now, give us that third choice. What is that third choice, Eldon?
All right. Well, all markets are the same around the world. Attorneys are at it. So I go. Okay. So the first, you know, choice is a matter of getting even. And the second choice is that opportunistic, you know, way of getting even. The third choice typically is a metaphysical one. You know, it goes like this. I'm not going to let this ruin my day. You know, it's just too spectacular a day. After all, I mean, maybe that blow was intended to give me some special enlightenment. You know, like John Travolta, I will have these special powers now. And I think of that as just denial. You know, it's just denial. That's all it is. So the bottom line comes down to this then. None of those three choices are proactive choices that for any purpose whatsoever, pragmatically speaking, empower you. So what else could you do? If my life is about, I want to enjoy life, I want to be healthy and happy, I want to optimize my immune, endocrine, and ANS system, all the time. I want to avoid cortisol. I don't need all that negative neuro chemicals in my system. What else could I do? And here's where most people go silent. Because the bottom line is this. Listen, what if I were to pick up that flower? There are many possibilities, but what if I were to pick up that flower? Take it to a florist, have it repotted. Return it to the owner. Knock on their door, you know. Opens the door. Well, hello, Mr. or Mrs. You know, I'm Eldon Taylor, and your flower pot fell, struck me on the head. But, you know, the pot broke on the sidewalk. I didn't want to see the flower die, so I thought I'd repot it and bring it back to you as a gift of love. And I hope you like the new pot. And, you know, gosh, you probably ought to keep it a little closer from the edge of the balcony. Thanks very much. And you turn and you walk away.
Stop a second. I have to call the Vatican because I'm putting you in for canonization right now.
But can you imagine the look on the person's face?
Absolutely.
I mean, how are you going to respond? Now, here's my real question. When you put your head on the pillow at night, of those four possibilities, which one's going to put a smile on your face?
Absolutely. Absolutely, no question.
What does that mean? You know, if you fake a smile, I don't know, you know, I mean, the world ought to know this, because fake it until you make it is a great proposition. If you fake a smile, the brain doesn't know you're faking. The fact that your facial features have taken on that smile tells the brain everything's wonderful. And all of a sudden, all those good neurochemicals bathe your body. You know, the body's natural opiates, they just bathe your body, and you know what? You do feel good. In fact, I tell people, look, you want to change your life, here's a simple exercise you can do every single morning, and I guarantee that if you just do this for 30 days, you're going to see a real difference in your life. When you first wake up in the morning, put a big smile on your face, even if you have to fake it. I don't care what you dreamed about. I don't care how restless your night was. Put a big smile on your face and keep that smile there, you know, 30 seconds or so. Okay? That primes all these good neurochemicals. It's purely physiological. You know, people don't sometimes, I mean, we drive around these bodies and yet we don't understand them. Here's a fun little one for all of your listeners. And you can do this one too, Victor, if you will. Just take that right foot of yours and begin, you know, sitting down. You have to sit down to do this. Begin to move it in a clockwise circle. You got your foot going in a clockwise circle, Victor?
Yes, I do.
Now, take your right hand and write 6 in the air.
Okay.
When you wrote 6 in the air, did you find that foot didn't continue to go in a clockwise circle?
No, it changed to a counterclockwise dimension.
It changed direction, didn't it?
Absolutely.
You know, you say, why is the body wired that way? Well, there are so many things about how the body is wired that we should just learn, you know, in elementary school that it's unbelievable. But you're hardwired for this smile. The second thing I'd have you do, first thing in the morning, is say thank you, thank you, thank you.
Yep.
It reframes your day. It reframes everything. I don't care what you're saying thank you for. You know, maybe it's thank you that, I'm breathing and I'm alive. You know, maybe it's thank you that I'm smiling. Maybe it's thank you for nothing.
Yep.
Just say thank you, thank you, thank you. Gratitude. The research on gratitude is overwhelming. Gratitude has been shown in 26 different studies. And that, those 26 different studies, by the way, that's not current. They're ongoing studies. That's through 2013. Those 26 studies have shown, without a doubt, that gratitude increases your health, it increases your energy, it increases your level of happiness, and it increases your success as you perceive it. Not the perception of others, but your own sense of self. Success. So you can change everything by beginning your day that way. All right, I don't know how we got over to there, but okay, that's my answer. You know, I mean, there are four corners that I talk about to success in life in the book Choices and Illusions. And one of those corners is gratitude. But you know, I learned from the prison experiments that the first one has to be forgiveness. You see, what we learned, I mean, what we finally did with those inmates was essentially build some self-esteem affirmations around what we call the forgiveness principle. I forgive myself, I forgive all others, and I am forgiven. Why? Well, because what the inmates did was displace responsibility by blaming everything. And when you turn your focus to blame, you've essentially tied yourself up. I mean, there's a couple of ways to be tied up in the world. Somebody can physically bind you, or you can hang on to a thread attached to a doorknob and refuse to let go of it or pull it hard enough to break it. And that's what our beliefs are. When we blame anyone for anything, we essentially limit our own ability to be anything but a victim.
Yep.
And so if we want to empower ourselves, the first thing we have to do is forgive everyone and anything. So I have a pain in my leg. Well, who am I going to blame for the pain in my leg? Well, you see, forgiveness and gratitude go hand in hand.
Absolutely.
When I have no one to blame, well, then now I can be grateful for the opportunity to, I'm alive, or grateful for the opportunity to change my life, to empower my life, to build better relationships, to achieve the success that I've always wanted, that I've sensed within myself, that power that has just gone unmanifest because of self-limiting, self-sabotaging beliefs.
Absolutely. We've got about.
But I have to take. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. We've got about 2 minutes left in the segment. Go ahead. Please finish that thought. I apologize. Please finish that thought.
Okay. Well, in order for me then to practice forgiveness and find gratitude, I have to take responsibility for everything in my life.
Mm.
And I mean that. I mean, take responsibility. It isn't that you're responsible for bad things that happen. It's that you're responsible for doing all that you can do in an environment to improve that environment.
Yeah.
It is, you know, you're self-responsible. Let me give you an example of what I mean by that, because this is a reach for a lot of people. I'm not talking about just Emerson's viewpoint of self-responsibility, the classic essay. I want to reach that out. I want to stretch that out. It isn't, you know, what we're talking about goes like this. I moved my offices over to Las Vegas, Nevada, many years ago. And when I first got into Las Vegas, you know, and I got a post office box like everybody does. And the first day or two that the office is set up, I went to the post office box to collect my mail. The post office employees were the nastiest people I'd ever met, except for their patrons. Everybody was so nasty. It was such a harsh environment. It was hot. The air conditioning wasn't working on that given day. The first time I went, the doors were standing open and everyone was complaining. It was just nasty. And I thought, you know, there's no way I want to come down here every day and let this stuff kind of, you know, I mean, infect me, if you will. Maybe I'll give it to my secretary. Then I remembered, you know, you want to walk your talk. So what's the self-responsible thing to do? So this is what I really did, Victor, and I promise you this is true. Every day I would go to the post office. I would put a big smile on my face. I would be friendly and outgoing, and I imagined it full of white light, full of smiles, full of people just feeling good about living. And initially that was very, very difficult. I had folks looking at me, well, what, you stupid, you crazy, you know? I would say, good morning, what the hell do you want? That's the response I'd get. But I promise you, before 30 days was up, I would walk up to that front desk, and instead of being greeted with, yeah, I was greeted, hey, Doc, how are you doing today? What can we do for you? Want just your mail? Everything had changed. All the patrons had changed. When you, as one person, begin to take responsibility for changing the environment you're in, to the best of your ability, you find the environment changes. And that's what I mean by self-responsibility.
That's a wonderful share. And we're going to talk about change in the next segment. My guest, Dr. Eldon Taylor, author of the book, Choices and Illusions. We'll be back with Eldon Taylor after these messages on the OM Times Radio Network.
OM Times Magazine is one of the leading online content providers of positivity, wellness, and personal empowerment. A philanthropic organization, their net proceeds are funneled to support worldwide charity initiatives via Humanity Healing International. Through their commitment to creating community and providing conscious content, they aspire to uplift humanity on a global scale. OM Times, co-creating a more conscious lifestyle.
Join me, Maggie Chula, on Mondays at noon Eastern for Mastermind with Maggie. Let's work together in a mastermind. We can resolve life's problems and create goals for the future. Build action steps empowering you to create your life in partnership with your divine source of light, your soul. Manifesting your goals can be simple and easy, so come with your problems and leave with a plan. The Akashic Master Teachers and I are waiting to help you.
Hi, this is Bill Maher. I can find humor in almost anything, but one thing I never laugh about is cruelty to animals. If you don't get the joke either, write People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals, 501 Front Street, Norfolk, Virginia, 23510.
And we're back on Destination Unlimited. My guest tonight, Dr. Eldon Taylor, author of the book, Choices and Illusions, How Did I Get Where I Am? And How Do I Get Where I Want to Be? We're talking about making positive change by being positive ourselves and by seeing the divine in others. But change is something that most people find very, very daunting. How may they be empowered to overcome the fear of change?
You know, I think when you look at the word change, you get two responses. First of all, I don't know anyone that hasn't at some time in their life wanted to change something. I've never met someone who hasn't been involved in some form of resolution at some point in their life. Second, you're absolutely right. That same person that wants change usually finds change fearful and uncomfortable. And the reason they do is because it's the unknown. It's what we don't know that we fear. But underlying this, laying behind the scenes, are these mechanisms, this enculturation process, these self-sabotaging beliefs that tell us we can't change. You set up this entire show by talking about the way we talk to ourselves. And that's something I've looked at for at least the last 30 years in numerous double-blind studies. We have found that by changing the way you talk to yourself, you can Well, let me give you some instances. In studies that were designed simply about priming the way you talk to yourself and thereby changing it, we have been able to effectively treat ADHD, reverse clinical depression in a matter of 30 days with patients who had been clinically depressed for years and had not responded either to pharmacology and or to psychotherapeutic processes, methods. Increase sports performance, decrease examination anxiety, augment weight loss, and on and on and on. In more than 50 different domains in clinical and double-blind studies. And look, a double-blind study is the most rigorous of all scientific methods because what's involved there is you've got a number of experimenters. So let's say I create a program. And I create a placebo, and I send you a placebo, and I send you a live program. These are going to be the intervention methods. This is what we do with the InterTalk technology that you also mentioned at the top of the show, Victor. So now you've got one CD that's marked A and another CD that's marked B. You're the experimenter. You don't know which is which. I don't know what group you're going to use them on. So you create your placebo group. You give them whatever CD. You create your experimental group. You give them whatever CD. You create your waiting control group, and you create your control group. Now, when you're all done, 30 days later, people listening to this CD, then you bring in your data. And you find that your data says, well, the people that receive CDA, we'll just say that's the active one because we used A, well, they had this tremendous statistically significant improvement. And the people that receive CDB, we'll call that the blank one, they're the ones that receive no improvement. So then once your data is together, you call me on the phone without telling me which is which, and I tell you, well, CDA was the one that contained active subliminal messages. CDB had, just simply people are walking benign messages. And you say, well, wow, the group A is where we had all of the... That's a tight double-blind study. And in more than 50 domains in clinical and double-blind studies, we've been able to show that simply changing the way you talk to yourself changes your perception, which changes your reality because your expectation has been changed. Listen, for years we've known about the expectation factor. Sometimes, you know, we get called, there's the Pygmalion side of that expectation factor. That's where we tell a teacher that we're giving you a student who is extremely gifted. He may be a little challenging for you to manage, but this is a student that is very gifted, implying high IQ, but we're really handing you a child that needs some special attention. No extra IQ, just a behaviorally challenged individual. What we find is that because we gave this student to you as gifted instead of behaviorally challenged, at the end of the school year, he's manifesting the gifted attributes. That's called the Pygmalion factor. Study after study has demonstrated that. We have the placebo factor. You know, and the placebo factor, listen, that is so studied, and we are studying it more now. We know that if I give you a plain white pill, it's 20-25% effective, given the right authority presentation, your doctor handing it to you, this will cure you. Put a big initial on that pill, it's more effective. Make it a capsule, and it's still more effective. Colorize the capsule, and we even know what color to use, it gets still more effective. Make it an injection. Wow, now we're starting to challenge the real drug. Make it an operation, and we are competing with anything you can do pharmaceutically. We're getting 80, 85, even 90% effectiveness. What do you see change in all of these things? Your evaluation of its value. That's what's changing. You're believing more and more in the potency of this placebo. We have studies that show, I can suggest to you that a cheap wine is the expensive wine. It's the one that should taste better. And you will report, sure enough, that was a really great wine. Now, here's the important thing. That's a subjective report. But using fMRI, we actually see the same area of your brain reporting that we see when you taste the finest of foods or wines. So it's not just a subjective. This is something that's going on inside your brain, as with a placebo, somehow matching. We have research that shows us a multiple personality disorder patient can go from hypoglycemic in one personality to regular blood sugar at the snap of the finger. Change personality, bang, the body has changed. Not only that, there are reported instances of eye color change. We used to think the DNA was hardwired. What do you mean eye color change? Epigenetics is showing us, hey, it's not as hardwired as we might have thought. We used to think brain cells die as you enter the age of 30 and they don't regenerate. IQ is fixed, and on and on and on. All of that is BS. Neuroplasticity is what we know today, and the latest states of neuropsychology tell us this. One, you can change anything in your life. It doesn't matter how old you are, including your personality. It might be challenging, but you can change it. You can change your brain, the fundamental wiring of your brain, increase gray matter. All of this is covered in my book. But two, and this is neuroscience, not hogwash, hocus pocus, new age, anything. You can only change what you believe you can change. I'm going to say that again because I can't overemphasize it. You can only change what you believe you can change. That placebo only works when you really believe it. So the question isn't anymore about how do I change. It's about how do I change my beliefs?
Which leads to my next question. How important is spirituality and faith in changing mindset?
Well, in my view, it's critical. This I can tell you. The research shows us that incorporating spirituality in your life will increase the length of your life, will increase the overall health, wellness that you enjoy in your life, will enhance the relationships that you prosper with, will at the same time give you a sense of meaning or purpose. You know, Blaise Pascal has a wager, and it essentially goes like this. If I believe and there is nothing, then I've lost nothing. But if I believe and there is something, then I've gained everything. Mm. The bottom line to spirituality is that if I incorporate the spiritual side of things in my life, I have two advantages. The first one is hope. Think about this. Think of God as synonymous with hope. I don't know, you know, we'll just use G-O-D as grand organizing designer. I don't know what word you're comfortable with. Some religious people or, you know, veer at different words. So just think of God as hope. With God, there is hope. There is hope that there's an afterlife. There is hope that there is meaning to life, which simply means that if I lose a loved one, there's hope that I may join them, I may see them again. It simply means that if bad things happen, there's hope that there's a reconciliation of some kind somewhere or some reason, some purpose, some greater something. I think of God as H-O-P-E, hope. Okay? The second advantage that I gain as a result of this is I have a hidden power. I have an intelligence, a divine intelligence within. That intelligence that heals my body without me ever telling it what to do. That intelligence that knows when to make new cells to replace the damage that I do to my skin. This divine intelligence within also prompts me. It encourages me. It gives me intuition. It provides me with creativity. It guides me. And that gives me a whole new plethora of opportunities. It gives me a support mechanism that I don't have without it. Now, there's some brilliant men like Christopher Hitchens that have been, you know, atheists. And maybe, you know, they found some way to make that work for them. For me, there are no atheists in foxholes.
Yeah.
And I don't need to be in a foxhole to accept the possibility that hope, again, God, brings to my life.
And those wonderful words of wisdom for Dr. Eldon Taylor, our guest tonight. He's the author of Choices and Illusions. How did I get where I am and how do I get where I want to be? Eldon, please tell our listeners one more time how they can find out about you and your wonderful work.
Sure, you can get the book at all bookstores, or you can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble online, or you just go to my website, Eldon Taylor, ELDONTAYLOR.com. A lot more information there and a lot of free stuff as well.
You know, a lot more information. We could have gone on for hours. Unfortunately, we're limited to the time that we have. Thank you so much for joining me this evening.
It's indeed been my pleasure. Thank you for the opportunity to share. And Victor, keep doing what you're doing.
And you too, sir. Thank you very much. And thank you for joining us tonight on Destination Unlimited. I'm Victor the Voice Furman. Have a wonderful night.